my personality to be jittery. It's part of my charm.
Wrestling fans,
are you ready?
It's time for my 1-2-3 cents of a podcast on the Jittery Monkey Podcasting Network.
Give me a hell yeah!
Now, here's your host.
The man is also a very long, dear, personal friend of mine.
Does the guy have a name?
Yes, he has a name.
Kevin Huntsberger.
Woo!
Hey, friends. This is episode 236 of my 1-2-3 cents of the podcast. It is, of course, Memorial Day as well. So if you are listening on Monday, obviously we appreciate the sacrifices that the men and women who serve our country make. And my guest this week is Chad Smart from the Positive Cynicism podcast. And Chad, you know, I'm going to sound petty bringing this up, but I'm going to do it anyway. A couple years ago, I wrote a blog on Memorial Day honoring some veterans, some indie wrestlers who are veterans who have served our country. And someone actually was offended by that and actually unfollowed or blocked me on Facebook, like not only unfriended me, but blocked me on Facebook. That's how offended they were because I was tying wrestling into Memorial Day. And these are legitimate real life human beings who served our country. And to me, it was just a shout out of respect. I was not trying to make any unusual parallels. I wasn't talking about storyline veterans by any means, but actual legitimate people who are my friends actually too. So I just thought that whenever Memorial Day rolls around and I have something wrestling related going on, I'm very cautious about that because apparently there are some people who are very sensitive to that.
Kevin?
Yeah.
Newsflash, it's 2019. Everybody is sensitive about everything.
That's true. And Chad talks more about some of those sensitivities on his podcast, Positive Cynicism. And you've had some really good topics and good guests here. Now, I'll admit, I did not listen fully to the one that you did with Eric a couple weeks ago because I know you said there probably aren't any Endgame spoilers, but I have not seen it. I finally just watched Infinity War, and I still feel lost, but I have not watched Endgame yet. So what else do you have cooking over there at Positive Cynicism?
You know, we've got a lot of things going on, none of which I know of at the moment. I just know tomorrow, this show will drop on Monday, the following Tuesday, the next day. As this comes out, the latest Positive Cynicism, which I believe is episode 94, is our Wonder Why One Hit Wonder exploration, where we're going to be discussing the career of Carl Douglas, the mastermind behind Kung Fu Fighting.
Yes.
And then we've started a new segment. Instead of doing a pick of the month, we're doing a what if. And so I came up with a question that I will throw out to my co-host, Mike DeKalb, on that show and ask him, you know, what if this had happened? And then we go from there.
Well, spoiler alert for this show, we have a what-if question that will be coming up a little later, too. We're doing a wild card to kind of spoof and mock Vince McMahon and WWE's wild card concept. I'm a couple weeks behind on it because I had a couple of other things that popped up in between and whatnot. But, yeah, your Kung Fu Fighting episode I'm looking forward to because I hadn't really, even though I grew up in the 70s and 80s, I didn't remember that song until college, and a friend of ours sang that song religiously at karaoke. She was a big fan of that song, so it has always been one of my favorites for those purposes, you know, that nostalgia that you and Travis have talked about too so much on your show, of how that is such a wonderful thing out there, so.
Yeah, I actually think the conversation that Mike and I have discussing Carl Douglas is actually probably one of our better discussions. I have not edited the episode yet, but based on what I remember of our discussion, it was really good. But I was going to say, tying this in too, you mentioned we're doing the wild card tying into WWE and their well thought out planned topics or ideas. While we are recording this, I'm actually watching the Double or Nothing pre-show. And you mentioned this is episode 236.
Yes.
You realize in 10 episodes, that will be 246, which is double 123 or my 123 cents.
Wow, brother.
So I don't know what you're going to do for that milestone, but just throwing that out there to put that in your head.
Wow, you've put some thought in it. Did you just come up with that, or have you been pondering that?
No, I just thought of that when you mentioned what episode this is.
So, yeah, you bring up AEW and All In, or Double or Nothing, and I may be the only wrestling fan in America not watching this show. As you mentioned, we are recording. I don't know. We're going to talk, a little AEW. Some of the questions I think may spawn more AEW discussion, but let's talk now about it. And obviously, as we mentioned, the show is happening as we record, so we don't have the results. We don't know what is going to happen, but we haven't really talked on this show in a while. Partly because you haven't been on in a while, but is AEW now, since we last recorded together, they have a TV deal on TNT. We both were kind of in the neighborhood of, it's great, but it's not going to be, Vince McMahon should not be losing any sleep at night. Do you still feel that way? I know there's all kinds of rumor and innuendo out there and whatnot. Will AEW be a bigger threat once they get that TV deal signed, sealed, and delivered and have that first set of matches?
Given the thoughts that I've had over the past week, I think I could do the entire show just talking AEW.
Mm-hmm.
I don't think they will be the threat that the AEW fans want them to be or think they are already.
It's overhyped.
It's what?
You think it's overhyped?
I don't think it's overhyped. I just think I think AEW will be successful, but I don't think they're going to attract the wide swath of wrestling fans. I think it's going to be a very niche market,
mm-hmm.
or niche product, because I think that's what indie wrestling itself is. We talk about this at the list of topics that you gave me that we're going to discuss. I don't think they're going to reach out and get necessarily the families that the WWE's attracts. Mm-hmm. I think you're going to get those hardcore fans that would go watch wrestling in a, small place with 200 other fans. And yes, when they do a big show like Double or Nothing, like All In, they will be able to pull 10, 20,000 people together for that. But on a weekly basis and TV taping, I don't think they're going to get more than what Ring of Honor or TNA or any of your other promotions get. And I could be wrong, and I hope I am. I hope it's a success as far for everyone that's involved. But I don't see this, at least for the first 2 to 3 years, being a major threat to WWE.
Do you think, though, that once maybe there at one point was rumors of Bill Goldberg, which obviously he has signed to do another show with WWE, the Saudi show. I think they're calling it Super Show this time around. Do you think if AEW is able, because other than Chris Jericho and Cody Rhodes and now Dustin, but Dustin I think is kind of in that twilight, for the general wrestling fan, I don't know that they know who, and again, I know there are going to be people listening to this who are going to get aggravated with my comments, but they don't necessarily know who the Young Bucks are or who Kenny Omega is or, Hangman Page, some of these other names that we know because we're wrestling fans and we follow multiple products, but the general populace, would probably be able to rattle off 3 or 4 WWE superstars before they would even know what AEW even stands for. And that's not a slight or a disrespect to AEW, but like you said, I think in the minds of that specific fan group, fan base, they're having bigger signs of grandeur. And I don't think that Cody and the Bucks are necessarily in that camp. I don't think they're coming out to compete with Vince McMahon. I think they're coming out to have an alternative. And I think that's really where other companies have failed. you know, Impact or TNA. I think they tried for so long to be WWE's direct competition, and it just didn't work. And Ring of Honor to an extent, but do you think AEW will take it to that next level where they become a solid number two and surpass Impact and Ring of Honor?
I will say yes, just because they have a better TV deal.
Mm-hmm.
So more people will be able to watch them. But like you said, if I don't think there's any name wrestler that is out there that they could sign that's going to draw fans in. Because you can look at TNA, who had Sting, Kurt Angle, Ric Flair. You know, they, every big name that they signed didn't really move the needle that much. Because it's not, and I think this is probably due to WWE's dominance, is the company is bigger than the star.
Right.
And I know you can look at people like Austin and The Rock and even John Cena or Hulk Hogan who become big stars outside of the company, but it's still WWE. And when it comes to wrestling, WWE is what most people associate with wrestling.
Yeah.
So that's, yes, I think that's the main key is I think I texted you this earlier this week. It's you look at the independent scene, and this is going to be probably insulting to independent wrestlers, and I don't mean it that way, but most of the independent wrestlers now look like your average guy. There's no larger than life personas. And I think that's what wrestling is missing to get that next boom period. And from what I have seen with AEW, yes, they have talented wrestlers and they have guys who have a name on the indie scene, but they don't have that breakout personality yet.
Yeah, I mean, and I don't disagree with you on that. And I mean, if you even go back to when, you know, we became fans and in the 80s, you know, everybody had a personality. Everybody was larger than life, even if they're, you know, physically speaking, they weren't. But even back then, you know, you had Hulk Hogan and Andre the Giant and Hacksaw Jim Duggan and Jake the Snake and Rick Rude and Ultimate Warrior.
Yeah.
And, you know, those guys, not only were they big personalities, they were big physically. So that's where a lot of times I think, you know, these guys on the indie scene or, you know, smaller companies have to really be the total package when it comes to being able to work in the ring, but also kind of have that personality to get themselves over. Because like you said, there are times that you are going and you're watching guys that look, you know, like you or, you know, someone that you know or what or whatever the case may be. And that's not an insult, but that is,
I mean, even looking at, so as we're recording, the Battle Royal on Double or Nothing just ended. And there are a lot of guys that if I was just watching this and I had no idea who any of these people are, looked very much like Johnny Boots and Tights.
Mm-hmm.
It's, you know, it's just like, oh, okay, there's a guy, average build, you know, trunks and tights. So there's nothing to it. And this is probably going to get me in trouble with your poor audience. But like right now on the indie scene, Marco Stunt is a huge attraction.
Mm-hmm.
Figuratively speaking.
Right.
If you put Marco Stunt in front of a WWE centric crowd, so guy with their, again, I'm going with a family demographic.
Mm-hmm.
Do you think like the dad is going to look at Marco Stunt and tell his son like, oh man, you know, someday you can be there? Or is he going to look at his like 7-year-old son and be like, oh man, you could beat up that guy. You could beat him. And it's, I think that is a disconnect where, you know, again, no offense to Marco. I think he's a very talented and athletic person, but I have a hard time buying into his matches because of his size. And I don't want to go into the whole, you know, Vince McMahon mentality that they have to be 6'6", 300 pounds or whatnot. But when you have guys that look like they've never seen the inside of a gym, or as I like to say, the closest I get to working out is knowing a guy named Jim, then, yeah, there's that. I don't think you're going to bring in a large audience based on that. Look, you're going to bring in the diehard fans.
Right. I mean, you know, and not to veer too far off the path, but would Terminator have been a more successful film if somebody like, say, Jim Carrey was playing the Terminator, or, you know, somebody like Arnold Schwarzenegger, who, you know, I do think you're right, you know, and not to be like the Vince McMahon, everybody's got to be that cookie cutter steroid prototype, because even I would say the roster in WWE has changed, and we have Sami Zayn and Kevin Owens and, you know, Kofi Kingston, those guys that don't fit into that mold. But, you know, you also look at guys like Brock Lesnar and Roman Reigns and The Rock and John Cena, and, you know, there are obvious differences there. And, you know, I don't want to veer too much into the what you look like, it matters in wrestling, because I do think that there are, you know, there are obviously some things that can change and will change through the years as well as the business evolves, fans will evolve and their perceptions and whatnot evolve too. So,
I think it goes back to character. And I was going to say real quick, yeah. Do you know who the studio originally wanted for Terminator?
No.
O.J. Simpson.
Are you serious?
James Cameron said no one would believe him as a killer. That's total legit. I'm not trying to be funny.
Wow. That's amazing. I did not know that. Learning something new on this week's My 1-2-3 Cents. Awesome. Well, let's dig into the wild card topic and do more of that, and we can pepper in more if things come to our mind or whatever throughout this recording. But the first question comes from Jeff Holtke, who is a good friend of the show, who, by the way, I don't know, Chad, I don't even know if you saw this. You might have seen it. Jeff is someone that I met here in Southern Illinois. He now works, lives in Central Illinois. He was our correspondent of sorts at All In back in September. But Jeff also, I don't know how he did it, but he got a recording, a video from the coach, from Coach, not the coach, but from Coach, Jonathan Coachman. As I mentioned last week on the show, I have announced that I am leaving my job in TV news. Anyway, Jonathan Coachman to record a message for me. Is about a minute and 20 seconds or whatever, but I was completely amazed and blown away by it, so I wanted to thank Jeff publicly for that, and of course, Coach, for taking some time to do that. So it was a very unexpected surprise that I appreciate. So anyway, his question is, which superstars should be sent back to NXT? I think these are two separate questions, and then if you could rebrand one superstar with a new gimmick, who would it be, and what would the gimmick be? So start off with sending a superstar back to NXT. Who would you send back to NXT, Chad?
My first thought on this was actually somebody that I texted you about earlier a week. Every time I text you, it's just going to be earlier in the week. So I'm going with a guy who reminds me of your favorite president, and that is Bo Dallas, because I think the NXT Bo Dallas character was very well done. The transition to the main roster of bringing that character up with no backstory, especially when he came up, was right after the network, you know, had launched and before NXT became NXT. I don't think the Bo Dallas character ever fully caught on with the main roster fans. So I'd like to see him sit back down to NXT, kind of go back into that delusions of grandeur character, and then just maybe work it back up and try again. But I think Bo Dallas has a bright future in the sport. I just don't think he's doing much on the main card.
And that actually, that's funny, because Bo Dallas was my pick as well, for all the same reasons that you just named. And you know, to me, and you said something very interesting, go back and then maybe come back to the main roster. Is it, I don't think it's as bad anymore as it once was thought to be, that can NXT become a lifer brand of sorts? Like, would it be a bad thing for wrestlers to go to NXT if they weren't? And I'm not even talking about going back to NXT. I know Tyler Breeze, he's another good example. I think he is back feuding with Velveteen Dream now. Is it a step back? Because we used to call it developmental, but I don't necessarily feel like it's so much of a developmental anymore, you know. But then
certainly we're not going to see Seth Rollins or Roman Reigns going back to NXT, or even a superstar who wasn't necessarily there like Zack Ryder show up at NXT. But would it be a step back to work
Zack
NXT?
Ryder could go back to NXT for a little bit.
Oh yeah, that's true.
I believe that's when he started teaming with Mojo.
You're right. That is true. But I mean, yeah, like, is it a step back though, in your view as a fan? And I know you and I are obviously way out of the demographic that WWE is targeting, but is it a step back to go to NXT?
I don't think so. Not now, because NXT has proven itself. And, you know, whenever they do the pay-per-view weekends where NXT runs the TakeOver show the night before, it's usually everyone is looking forward to TakeOver more than the WWE show. So I don't see it being a demotion or, I mean, I think, and I guess it would depend on the wrestler themselves, their perspective. Is it, I want to wrestle. I want to show what I can do. So you get people like Cody or Sean Spears, who, you know, Ty Dillinger, that leave WWE so they can go out and actually wrestle. Or do you have guys that are like, you know what, I'm not doing what I want to do, but I'm making good money and I'm not putting my body on the line as much. So I think in that regard, it would come down to personal preference. But I think in the eyes of the fans, if you've been on the main roster and show up on NXT, I don't think anyone's going to look down at you. I think you're actually going to get a favorable reaction. And then if you can bust your ass in the ring, they're going to accept you even more.
Okay, so I like what you're saying here, and I'm going to actually kind of tie into another question, and then we'll get back to the rest of Jeff's question. Where does WWE go into the future to stay relevant? And I find it interesting because everybody, you hear people talk and they love NXT, they hate WWE, they say that Triple H needs to take over, that this, that, and the other. Is it that NXT is that much better than WWE, or is it because we're only getting an hour of NXT a week and then a 2-hour pay-per-view once a quarter or every, you know, handful
like three,
of months?
15 now.
What's that?
The pay-per-views are more like 3 hours or 3 hours and 15
minutes.
Oh,
okay. So they've added some time to them. But, and obviously I have not watched the NXT from WrestleMania weekend all the way through yet. But, you know, is the problem the demand from WWE's networks, USA, and in the future here, Fox, that they have to have 3 hours of Raw? You know, I don't necessarily think that's completely WWE's fault. You know, USA, and even though everybody craps all over it and it's the lowest rated show in the history, it's still the best rated show on USA. And USA is going to continue to want that instead of running reruns of Modern Family or NCIS or whatever else they're running, or Chrisley Knows Best. I mean, you know, it's still a cash cow for these networks.
Yeah, and that's, I mean, my note for this question was, doesn't matter, TV rights. You know, they just got out an astronomical amount of money from USA and from Fox for the rights to Raw and SmackDown. And, you know, and they're getting who knows how much money from Saudi Arabia. Mm-hmm. As long as they can keep doing that, then it really doesn't matter what we, you know, what the fans want, even though Vince McMahon will say that he listens to the fans and whatnot. But
okay,
you're
well,
right, you know,
no, go ahead.
Yeah, I believe USA was the one that wanted the third hour.
Yeah,
according to reports out this week, USA are the ones behind the 24/7 title, which I am not a fan of, and I think it's going to do more damage to the lower card than anything, even though it will give them TV time. But I think the problem with Raw, my main problem with WWE programming is the underutilization of talent. And that is, you know, you have a three-hour show, but you get the same people week after week, whereas because NXT only has an hour, they rotate people from show to show. And I think if WWE actually looked at everybody that is on their roster that's not being used and said, okay, you know, obviously you want to keep you know, your Seth Rollins, your Roman Reigns, AJ Styles on the show. But do we need, you know, isn't there a place for your Apollo Crews, Mojo Rawley? I mean, when was the last time Zack Ryder and Curt Hawkins were on TV and they're the tag team champions?
Right. Yeah, and so then that kind of now leads me to another question. AEW, Cody Rhodes, the Bucks, you know, they have all been very vocal and have said they're going to do XYZ, and it, to me, almost feels like a politician. You know, they all say certain things before they get elected, but then once the reality of being elected sets in, they can't deliver on some of those promises. And then it becomes, well, they lied. And it, is it that they're really lying, or is it that they don't know what they're getting into and then they can't execute? Will that, you know, will TNT have those kinds of powers or limitations or restrictions over AEW's content that they demand things that maybe hurt the core fan base, but the bottom line for that network is benefiting from it? And like you said, you know, the network is going to rule what that content is, I think.
Yeah, and that's an interesting question, because if you look back at the dying days of WCW, one of Vince Russo's biggest scapegoats is blaming everything on the network. It's like, mm-hmm. I couldn't do what I wanted to do because of the network standard and practices. Well, AEW is going to have to fall in line with the network S&P as well. And granted, you know, 20 years later, I'm sure they can probably get away with more than what WCW was able to get away with, just because of the change in the television landscape. But at the same time, yeah, until AEW gets out there and starts putting on a show, and you can say, oh, we want to do X, Y, and Z, but you have to see, and I think this is a problem with online critics too, is, you know, you might have this great storyline on paper that doesn't connect with the fans. And so, if that's the case, you may have to rework something. You may, you know, have to change something around. But, sorry, I had another thought here and I was going to go into it. But, I was going to say my other thing with AEW and what they're saying is you look at the roster and I would say about 80% of it are all top-tier indie talents. So, you know, who's going to be, you know, because they have said that they're going to make winning and losing a factor and mean something, but someone's got to lose. Mm-hmm. And, you know, unless they're going to bring in local talent to, you know, job out every week, once, say, SoCal Unlimited or I'm trying to think of other guys on the roster, or, you know, like if Jericho goes in and starts meeting everybody, is it going to be complaining of guys not getting pushed, or, you know, I don't know. There's a lot of what ifs with AEW.
Sure. Well, let's hop back up to the second part of Jeff's question. If you could rebrand one superstar with a new gimmick, who would it be and what would the gimmick be?
You know, and this is something that I wish I would have spent more time on, because there's probably something there, but off the top of my head, my answer is Baron Corbin, and I would re-gimmick him as the Invisible Man. I mean, would take him off my TV, and I would never see him again.
Very well, very well. You know, I don't know if I've even mentioned this to you. I don't think I've publicly said anything, but in my head, just because of the production value that was attached to it, I thought, what if WWE is rebranding Dean Ambrose as Jon Moxley? And the character Dean Ambrose is escaping the prison of being Dean Ambrose, and now he's returning to his roots and whatnot. I don't think that's going to be the case. He may show up at Double or Nothing as we're speaking now, but that was the one kind of thing that kind of popped into my head. But obviously, there are many talents on the roster right now that are underutilized. And as you mentioned, this 24/7 title, it's not going to make a difference. But Apollo Crews was someone that you brought up. I'd love to see him repackaged and, you know, something better done with him. I am a fan of his, but he just kind of seems to be one of those guys that's lost in the shuffle and really has been since getting brought up to the main roster.
I'm going to interject real quick here, because like I said, I have Double or Nothing on right now.
Please.
It looks like it's the end of the pre-show. The main show hasn't started, but the Bucks, Cody and Brandi Rhodes, and Kenny Omega have come out to talk to the crowd. And the crowd's going crazy, as you would expect. But again, isn't this very similar to, and I'm sure the tone of whatever they're saying is going to be different, but isn't this very similar to the McMahons coming out at the beginning of every show?
Right. You're right. It's like politics. Yeah. I think wrestling is a lot like politics, where you're going to see, you know, it's okay when your side does it, but when my side, or when my side does it, but when your side does it, I'm gonna hate it just because I want to hate it.
Yeah.
This is gonna be a fun ride. I can't wait to see what all happens with AEW.
Yeah. Yeah. And I don't know what they're saying. I have the volume turned down.
Sure.
I should have actually turned the captions back on. But it's just interesting. It's interesting. And you can go listen to Positive Cynicism episode 93, I believe, which is Politi Ticked Off, where we kind of discuss political hypocrisy. So, cheap plug.
Cheap plug. Let's talk Tom Harness, who is a friend of the show, and you've met him now a couple of times. Not a very, he doesn't watch a whole lot of wrestling now, but he is a fan from the past. He threw out a couple of good questions. One of those, by the way, was how does WWE stay relevant? But he also asks, what will be the very last match that will end WWE if it were to close shop this year? So if WWE were to go out of business, say December 31st, they're throwing a going out of business pay-per-view event. What is the main event? What match closes that show? And I'm going to say, what match do you want to see? Or what match do you, because I think what we think will be and what we want to be are two totally different things.
Okay, I'll have to think about what match do I want. But I have three possibilities for what would be. One, if they could get him into the, you know, to do a show, I think you would have Triple H versus The Rock. Because I think they would end with something attitude eerie. And Austin is not coming back. If they can't get The Rock, I would go with Triple H versus Randy Orton, just because.
Mm-hmm.
And then I would go with the match that they might try as a kind of nod to WCW would be a mixed intergender tag match, Triple H and Stephanie versus Charlotte and Ric Flair.
Oh, wow. I like that. Kind of. I mean, I went to kind of the old school well, too, and by old school, I mean Attitude Era, and I could actually see, if this was going to be it, I could see them convincing and throwing enough money Austin's way to get him to do one more match, and it would be against The Rock, because I think that's got to be in the top 10, top 5 wrestling rivals of all time, or rivalries of all time. So, you know, I don't necessarily think, and, you know, I can't imagine somebody like Hogan coming back in and doing a match today, or any, but I don't see them closing out with like a Daniel Bryan versus Finn Balor, which would be a match I'd want to see, but I don't see that kind of being the adios, we're done here. Because, you know, Austin and Rock were obviously the two biggest stars during the biggest money-making era of pro wrestling. So, to me, I could see that being, you know, Austin, Rock. But as you said, Austin, if not able to go, being Triple H because his stature in the company, but also he had a pretty epic feud with The Rock as well, so.
Yeah, I can see that, definitely, if Austin would want to come back. And I could see them wanting to end it with two guys not on the roster.
Yeah, yeah.
But the match I'd like to see is just Brock Lesnar versus everybody. Or yeah. Brock just destroys everyone.
So, Tom also asks, speaking of the end of WWE, what would it be that would end the WWE, and where would it be over? Which I'm not sure. I think he's just basically asking what incident would end or cause the WWE to close its doors, to close shop.
Yeah, I would say, one, if Vince sold the company and Triple H and Stephanie couldn't take it over, that would be the only thing, because I think you would get a corporation to buy it,
yeah,
and a corporation that doesn't have the passion or the, you know, that's not going to care, like, in 5 years, if it's not making money or they get bored, like, okay, just shut it down. No one cares. Whereas with the McMahons owning it, it's, that's their company, so they want it to succeed. I would say that, and then one that I think could be interesting in the next few years, possibly, is unionization of wrestlers. And I don't know what effect that would actually have business-wise on wrestling as a whole. And I think, you know, there are a lot of people who want to say that WWE should be doing this, but if they do, I think it will have ripple effects all the way down to the indies. And I don't think that would be a positive effect.
Yeah, those are both very good answers. I couldn't imagine Vince selling it to anyone other than Stephanie and Triple H, but, you know, stranger things have happened, and I guess if the price was right. But I do think, as much as people, you know, dump on the family, you know, imagine in the mid-90s when Nitro, well, even before Nitro was kicking kicking Raw's ass, you know, in that 93, you know, late 92, into, like, gosh, probably almost 96, 97, you know, those were some really crappy years for content and wrestling and ratings, and, you know, and had that been owned by someone, you know, like a corporation or a business, they may have, you know, shut shop down then. But, you know, Vince McMahon persevered and reinvented and did his thing, and not just him, his team did it too, but... You know, you make a good point about how, you know, the family dynamic plays a pretty considerable role in that. And that'll be interesting for, excuse me, and I hate to keep going back to AEW, but, you know, I know they have their investor who's putting the money into this and whatnot, but how much of a role will he have in the day-to-day operations versus what Cody and the Bucks have to say and do? And I say Cody, I guess Brandy is a part of that as well.
Yeah, and I'm going to tie this back down to WWE being relevant and tie it back in with AEW. Yes, if AEW is successful, I think what we see out of WWE right now will change, because that's what happened during the Attitude Era. You know, Vince had to change because someone else was doing better than he was. But when you're the only company in town, if you want to suck for 10 years and still make money, then why, where's your, you know, your impetus to change? So that's where the reason why I'm curious, and I hope AEW does well, is to see how Vince does react, and hopefully nothing knee-jerk reaction-wise. But yeah, I mean, I don't think, because WWE has been around for 35 years now, 40 years, I don't see them going out of business as long as, again, television, it's going to come back to television rights. As long as they can stay on TV, and we're right now with a lot, well, I shouldn't say a lot, I know with Fox, like, moving towards a more sports-oriented programming, because the networks want live programming, or programming that people won't DVR or just binge watch later when it's on a streaming service. So, yeah, I think as long as they can stay somewhat positive, and you know, they may have to make some cuts here and there, but yeah, I don't see WWE ending anytime soon.
Totally agree.
what 80s wrestler would you like to see take on someone from, he says the 2000s, but I'll make it a little even more precise, and I'll say within the last, you know, 10 years, within the 20 teens, if you will.
Well, that changes my...
Well, no, go ahead. Go ahead.
Well, because I was trying to think of who from the 80s, and the only name that came up for me was someone that I don't really remember from the 80s, and someone that I would have liked to have seen how his career went on when the hardcore style became more acceptable, and that's Bruiser Brody.
Okay.
So, yeah, I think you put him in the Attitude Era, or him against Necro Butcher, and it should be a fun fight.
I think Brody versus, like, Cactus Jack, mm-hmm. or, you know, Mankind, Brody and The Undertaker, those would have been some great matches. And Brody, of course, you know, when Bruiser Brody was murdered in 88, he was 42 years old. So, I mean, he was older anyway, but still seemed to have so much left. And man, I just, even Brody and Hogan from, you know, that era had Brody signed and gone to WWE, and again, it comes down to, well, what would Vince have done and changed him, and, you know, because Harley Race went and became the King, and you know, guys weren't necessarily always going to WWF and not getting attached with some new gimmick that, you know, Vince approved of. So
yeah, I guess, and this is going to be also bad because both guys are also dead now too, so you can do it, but I would have liked to see, you know, 80s era British Bulldog in today's tag team scene.
Yeah. I loved the British Bulldogs. British Bulldogs are still my favorite, you know, all-time tag team. And they would have, yeah, I think that they would have done some good things in today's generation. Now, I went with the generic, you know, typical WWE mark with my response, and that would be Hulk Hogan versus... Dun, 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 dun. John Cena. I think, you know, obviously it would not be a quote-unquote wrestling match, but it would be probably one of the biggest attractions, maybe of all time, I don't know. But, you know, Hulk Hogan and John Cena respectively leading their eras, if you will, of pro wrestling, specifically in the WWE. I just, and, you know, and again, I'm talking 80s Hogan versus mid-2000s John Cena. I'm not talking about, you know, Hogan now, obviously, even though I believe he has pitched to have that match at WrestleMania next year. So we'll have to wait and see on that. But I would have dug that match, even though Cena obviously wouldn't have been the typical Hogan foil from the 80s, but it still, I think, could have been a fun match.
Yeah, I mean, that would have been, you know, similar to Rock Hogan and Cena Rock, mm-hmm. where you're two big generational stars. But yeah, I don't. I mean, I hope Hulk Hogan never comes back and steps into the ring for a legitimate match, but. Yeah.
It may happen.
Yeah, I can go with that.
So, whose wrestling career do you think ended too soon? These are all still Tom's questions, by the way.
And this, I mean, obviously, the, I guess, sad answer is, again, going back to Bruiser Brody and Owen Hart.
Yes.
But I put down Paige. Just because retiring at 24 would have been interesting to see what else she would have done. And I was trying to think of other wrestlers that had shortened careers, or maybe Tom McGee, just so I would know who he is. I'm drawing a blank as to other guys that, I mean, the only other name I could think of is Chris Nowinski.
Oh, okay.
You know, ended his career due to concussions, but
Well, you know, and I took the dark route too. And I wonder if some of these questions were spurned from, because he has, Tom's been watching the Dark Side of the Ring documentary series. But I picked Gina Hernandez. And I don't think you maybe necessarily remember him as well as I did, but Gina Hernandez was a great villain in World Class Championship Wrestling, one of the best. He convinced Chris Adams, who was a longtime friend of the Von Erichs, to turn on the Von Erichs, and Chris Adams and Gina Hernandez teamed up, and they became, they were known as the Dynamic Duo, but they would, you know, cheat to win, and you know, they became, this was after the Freebirds left the territory, so Chris and Gino became the top heels against the Von Erichs, and Gino was extremely talented and was one of those guys that you just, to me, he was, I remember World Class very fondly, and I know some people are going to listen to this and be like, what the hell, but, you know, where WWF had Hogan and Piper, to me, World Class, it was Kerry Von Erich and Gino Hernandez. Like, Gino Hernandez was that antagonistic heel type character that was just, you know, he was talented in the ring, he was good on the mic, but unfortunately, Gino died very, very young, and I should have looked it up, but I think he was in his mid to late 20s, probably late 20s, when he died in 1986. You know, and I haven't watched the Dark Side of the Ring on him specifically yet, but, you know, there was a long-standing belief that it was from a cocaine overdose or a drug overdose of some sort. And I know there are some theories that he was murdered or whatnot, but I think that, you know, obviously he was at the tip of the, you know, he and Tully Blanchard had teamed up in Houston before he went to World Class in Dallas. And I know that, I mean, I've got to believe that he would have been one of those guys that Vince would have signed at some point for WWE for a run there. And hopefully not kind of getting lost in the shuffle like some of the other world-class standouts did. But, yeah, to me, I always wonder, you know, when I think back on guys, it's like what could have been, what should have been, with Gino Hernandez, because he, what to me was one of, you know, hindsight, of course, because at the time, I'm a young Mark that is booing him and cheering the Von Erichs, but in hindsight, it's like, man, he was good at what he did, and this was, you know, that guy you love to hate. You know, he was the Rowdy Roddy Piper of World Class, I think, and that's not an insult to, or to diminish what Piper was, but to tell you how much I thought of Gino Hernandez.
Yeah, I know the name Gino, but I don't have any memories of seeing him wrestle. I'm trying to remember when I watched World Class. I remember the Von Erichs. I remember the Dingo Warrior and the Missing Link, but mm-hmm. I think Gino and Chris Adams, but yeah, I think Gino may have already been dead by the time that I started watching, or...
Yeah, Gino died, like I said, it was, I believe it was in 86, and it was, that would have been right around or right before, like, Dingo comes in and some of those other guys. So might have been late 85 when Gino died. So, well, Asa Gray, not to end this on a sad note, we've got several other questions to get to, but Asa Gray says, is there a specific match that you feel like is great but doesn't get the attention or recognition it deserves? Asa, by the way, our friend from Podzilla 1985, over there on our Pro Wrestling Unscripted on Podzilla 1985's podcasting network. So shout out to those guys as well.
Yeah, this actually is not a, from a work rate perspective, it's not a great match by any means, but it's just a match that immediately came to mind. And I was going to look up and see which show it was on. You'll have to use your own Google machine to find out. It's a Jakara match, and it's Chuck Taylor versus Archibald Peck. Mm. I know they were in Canada at the time, I believe, And it was when Archibald had just been dumped by Veronica, his band cheerleader, and she had gone off with Mr. Touchdown, the football star. So Archie was a little despondent, a little depressed, and so he really wasn't in the mood to wrestle. And then finally they start wrestling, and the building they were in had this giant mural of like a countryside with a lake. And they end up fighting over to it, and then they stop and look at it and start taking photos and take like prom photos. And then Chuck decides to throw Archibald into the lake, not realizing that it's just a painting. And it's very Chikara-esque, and it's humor, but it's also humor that works because of the rules that Chikara has established in their career and holds to. That's my pick just off the top of my head. I'm sure I would have thought about this a little bit more. I could have came up with a more serious answer, but everyone should check out Archibald. Actually, everyone should just check out Archibald Peck, his matches from Chikara, and look up Artie Quitman Evans, who bears a striking resemblance to Archibald.
Well, wasn't Mr. Evans very recently, and I didn't realize this, he was working for WWE, was he not, as a writer?
Yes, and allegedly he was in charge of Bret Hart's speech at the Hall of Fame, and you're not supposed to mention Vince McMahon. Bret, and then from what I remember, Bret just told an anecdote of like being out with Vince. It wasn't like a thank you or anything. It was just a story he was telling, and Vince got all upset and either was going to fire Artie Evans, or because that was the rumor, Artie Evans quit before he could be fired. And so now that's why he's taken on the moniker of the Quit Man, and has his logo very similar to Bret's Hitman logo.
Is he wrestling again, or what's he up to?
I think he will be wrestling. He has not wrestled yet, as far as I know. But he says that he wants a match, I believe, with Orange Cassidy, who is the independent wrestling television champion. And if you haven't watched Orange Cassidy matches, you should also look those up.
You know, I haven't, but I've heard a lot about his style, his technique, or his gimmick, if you will, which is one of those, too, I think, you know, because since you brought up Chikara, there's a lot of that stuff I don't think that the mainstream would get, but obviously an appreciation and there's a fan base for it.
Exactly, yes. Chikara is not going to sell out 70,000 seats anytime soon, or even 20,000, but they can sell out a couple hundred, and they seem to be okay with that, and they know their place in the, you know, pro wrestling hierarchy or whatever, but it's just fun. We've been talking nostalgia on the show. The reason I like Chikara is because it brings me back to the 80s, where I don't know all the behind the scenes, or you have these characters that are not necessarily in Chikara larger than life, but they're characters, and it's just fun. It just makes me forget. I don't have to overthink everything and be a mark, or be a smark, I guess. I can just be a mark the entire time.
Yeah, and, you know, I'll be honest. To me, there was nothing that kind of jumped out to me of matches that didn't get the attention or recognition that they deserve. I mean, I look at some of those old WrestleMania matches. I think sometimes some of those events don't get, some of them get probably overhyped. I always still go back to my favorite WrestleMania match of all time, which is WrestleMania 7 Ultimate Warrior versus Macho Man Randy Savage, just because of the story it told. And I think when people look back on that particular WrestleMania, that is probably the match that stands out to most of them. And, there's always that fine line of what is your favorite versus what is the best, or what you think is the best. And you know, I can say who I think is the best wrestler versus who my favorite wrestler is. Actually, it happens to be Ric Flair in both cases, but I would go tag team wise. You know, obviously there are
my favorite tag team I mentioned was the British Bulldogs earlier, but I don't think they're the best tag team of all time. So, you know, wrestling, like everything else, other forms of entertainment, but I think wrestling even more so is so subjective and it's so personal for people because it may depend on what you're thinking, what you're feeling, what state of mind you're in when you're watching that match. And like you said, that nostalgia and being able to go back and remember. You know, I was 18 years old in a high school and a senior in high school when I was on the wine trail earlier today.
So were you taking Spanish and you were actually a senior in high school?
Yeah. So, you know, I remember those specifics about that match, you know, that WrestleMania. So I don't necessarily think other people don't appreciate it, though, but it is one of those that when I do mention it being my favorite WrestleMania match of all time, I do kind of get looks from people from time to time of, there's so many others that are so much better, but, you know, that's kind of where I am. And, of course, I think the match that I had with Roger Mathis last year about this time, actually, was pretty underrated too, but I digress. I'm kidding. I am really kidding.
About you know, that. If people could watch it, that's going to be the next mythical tape now that the Bret Hart Tom McGee match has been found. People will want to see Kevin Hensberger versus Roger Mathis.
You think Conrad will pay to have me and Roger fly out to the next StarCast event and break it down and talk more about it?
Yeah, maybe.
Yeah, we'll have to wait and see. Conrad's been on the show, so he's at least heard the words, my 1, 2, 3 cents. I don't know that he remembers them. So this is the last question, and it comes from Greg Mahochka, who is the founder of the Jittery Monkey Podcasting Network. And it's actually a very good question that I think would definitely rewrite wrestling history. What if Scott Hall and Kevin Nash had stayed in WWF in 1996? What would the next 5 years have looked like? So 1996, of course, everybody knows the story if you're a diehard wrestling fan, and even if you're not, Razor Ramon and Diesel were two of the biggest names in the WWF. Before signing with the WWF, they both wrestled in WCW. Kevin Nash was known as Oz, and he was part of a tag team, the Master Blasters. He also wrestled as Vinny Vegas. And Scott Hall, before he wrestled as Razor Ramon in the WWF, was the Diamond Stud, but he was also Scott Hall, and he wrestled in the AWA before that, and even before that, he was wrestling some independent or, you know, smaller promotions as just part of a tag team. He and Danny Spivey. It was Starship Coyote and Starship Eagle. They were kind of, you know, in WCW, I think it's fair to say that they were both mid-card at best. They go to WWF in 92 and in 93, respectively. Hall went first, became Razor Ramon, probably an extension and a more amped-up version of the Diamond Stud, I think, had more personality. And I don't know if that was, you know, the WWF getting behind that and kind of pushing and bringing something out of him. And then, of course, Kevin Nash or Oz shows up as Diesel, the bodyguard for Shawn Michaels. They stay for a few years and get wooed back to WCW, where Scott Hall interrupts Monday Nitro, declares a war, and then Nash comes in a little bit later. And we're off to the races as they start the Outsiders, and then Hogan joins them, and the NWO is born. And wrestling really changes forever after that moment, I think. So, Chad, I'll let you kind of, I've given the backstory. What say you, what would have happened if Hall and Nash stayed in the WWF?
There's no attitude error.
Yeah, that's the short answer.
What's that?
I said that is the short answer for sure.
Yeah, or I guess maybe the attitude error still happens, but because ECW was around, and that's pretty much what everyone stole to do the Attitude Era, but I don't think you have Steve Austin.
No.
Or at least the Stone Cold that we know, because if Nash and Hall are there, the Madison Square Garden curtain call never happens.
Yep.
That doesn't happen. Triple H wins King of the Ring 96. Austin doesn't. Austin 316 is never born because that was such a specific scenario for that catchphrase to come to fruition or come to realization. And does WCW then, are they able to take control or take over without the NWO storyline, or would they bring in someone else? That's the tricky part. But yeah, I think if Hall and Nash stay, your short answer, like I said, is the Attitude Era doesn't happen when it does.
Well, and you know, I did look up the ratings for Raw and for Nitro leading up to the Outsiders showing up, and they were going back and forth pretty consistently, and even on weeks when Raw would win and Nitro lost, it was such a small margin of a win. Like, I'm looking at a 2.9 versus a 2.8, a 3.1 versus a 3.2, or I'm sorry, a 3.1 versus a 2.8, a 3.3 versus a 2.7. These are the weeks, the 3-4 weeks before Scott Hall showed up on Nitro. And then after that, you know, they went back and forth a little bit. But then it was by September, really actually by the middle of June when Hogan turned, Raw didn't win again for 83. That's when the 83 weeks came into play. So, and then not only were they winning, they were kicking Raw's ass until they shifted gears. But you're right, you know, it's been well documented that Triple H was supposed to win King of the Ring 96, and he was being punished by whomever, and it's still kind of the jury out on who was doling out that punishment, because the Click says that Vince McMahon knew what they were doing and they had permission. But to me, if Vince McMahon endorsed and got behind the punishment of Triple H, then I don't think he was as privy to it as they claim he was. But yeah, Hall and Nash stick around, and I don't think that they were necessarily, you know, I think Scott Hall might have gotten a run with the championship as Razor Ramon. I think that he's one of those guys from that era for sure who definitely I would have loved to have seen had a world title run.
Yeah, because if they stay, the other aspect is, do you get the ascension of The Rock? Does he come up, or does the Click, you know, because apparently there were some bad, I don't want to say bad feelings, but supposedly McMahon, or Michaels and The Rock didn't get along,
mm-hmm.
or The Rock had bad feelings about Michaels due to prior events. So does The Rock get his ascension with Nash and Holland still there? And I think I'm with you. I think Razor Ramon would have been a champion, especially if Sean still goes out injured, which most likely would have happened because, well, he would have been injured. But then, you know, does Brett leave in 97 as well? Does
I think Brett stays, yeah, because Vince McMahon is not in. Here's the thing. It would have depended on who Eric Bischoff brings in to be that big. Because, like I said, the ratings, even with Hogan and Savage over there, the ratings were still pretty even. And so I think Bret Hart, as loyal as he is or was, he's not going to go anywhere. And Vince McMahon isn't at risk, you know, because at one point, you know, they're canceling the bottled water service. They're counting the pin. You know, they're trimming everything they can in Stanford to make ends meet. And I don't think without Hall and Nash, and then of course Hogan turning heel and creating that NWO, and you couldn't have done the NWO without Hall and Nash or without two big names coming from WWF. And at that time, no one else was leaving. So I just think it would have been, I don't think it would have ignited things, at least not in 96. Now, maybe a couple years later if Bret Hart's contract is up and he does sign, but I don't know that it would have had the impact that Hall and Nash and Hogan had. And, you know, I used to be of the belief, because I, you know, I've always said it, I love wrestling, but WWF was always my favorite. So when Hall and Nash left, even though I wasn't necessarily a big Kevin Nash fan, watching him leave, I knew that was going to be a blow. But then what they did with it was even worse, and I thought this is going to be hard for the WWF to overcome. But in hindsight, we wouldn't have gotten Austin. And I love Stone Cold Steve Austin. And like you said, we probably wouldn't have seen the ascension of The Rock and, you know, Mick Foley and some of those guys. I don't know that they would have had the opportunity to shine had Hall and Nash stayed. And not because I think Hall and Nash would have held them back, but I just don't think there would have been the urgency from either side. It would have been a very complacent, here's what we're doing this week and whatever, and there wouldn't have been those big guns pulled out, so to speak.
Yeah, that's a good point. Yeah, if there is no NWO, excuse me, then the trajectory changes. And again, I think it, you know, even if they would have stayed, like I said, maybe Bischoff would have gotten two other people whose contracts would have came up later and did it, just delayed the NWO. I don't know.
It's a good question. I really enjoyed that. I enjoyed
it. And again, it's one of those things where I wish we all had the powers of Doctor Strange and could go into all the different timelines and see what would have happened, but
that would be awesome. Well, that is all of the wild card topics. I want to thank everyone who participated and sent in. Tom Harness, Asa Gray, Greg Mahochko, Jeff Holtke. And then, of course, we had our own that we kind of peppered in there as well. Chad, thank you once again for being a part of the show. And remind everyone how to reach out to you on social media.
You can find me on Twitter at Chad Smart. You can go to Facebook and search Positive Cynicism. And really the only thing I post there is the weekly link to the podcast. And there is a PositiveCynicism.com that has not been updated in 6 months, but hopefully sometime that will get changed. But best way, Twitter at Chad Smart.
Yes. And if nothing else, see our snarky comments to each other on a nearly daily basis. It's one of my highlights of the day. So, again, everyone, thank you for listening. Again, head on over to jitterymonkey.com. You can click the shop button, do some shopping there. You can shop over at Pro Wrestling Tees, /my123cents, get some swag at either one of those locations. And also, rate and review this show, screenshot it, and send it to me on the My123cents Facebook page. I'm running a contest over on the YouTube channel. On the Go Figure Friday, you can win some figures that I recently bought, so be sure to check that out as well. Thanks again, everyone, for listening, and we will talk again next week.
This is a production of the Jittery Monkey Podcast Network. For more jittery shenanigans, go to jitterymonkey.com.